Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello there, it's another bonus surprise Rahalastapa coming out on a Friday. This one with Rob Rouse, recorded at the Long Division Festival in Wakefield. It's a goodie. Look, we're doing loads more on tour. If you go to richherring.com/gigs, you can find out all about those all through the autumn. I'm also at the Edinburgh Fringe at the Newtown Theatre at 1:30 every day from the 2nd to the 25th of August. Not Mondays, though. I'm having those off, my fan friends. If you go to richherring.com/rahalastapata/tour, you can find out who the guests are going to be. We've got Tony Slattery, Lucy Beaumont, loads more people than I can possibly mention here. And you could also find out about the tour, richherring.com/gigs, and see if we're coming to a town near you. We're adding gigs all the time. It's lots of fun seeing it live. Go to rahalastapa.co.uk for lots more information. And if you want to become a member and get some badges and stuff, you can do it there. It's good. All right, bye. Oh, don't go. Come back. There's a podcast. Here's with Rob Rouse.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Theatre Royal Wakefield. We're back for another week. Hope you met the last week's audience. Here's your man who spent the last week eating nothing but rhubarb. It's Richard Herring.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much. Oh, you're lovely. Thank you very much. Welcome. Welcome along. Thank you for coming and thank you for having me in your beautiful theatre again. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lobotomizing Surly Teenagers podcast. Find the youngest person in the audience. They're usually about 17. Just cut bits of the brains out and see what happens. If you suck out the hypothalamus, that's always good fun. Though I was in the rhubarb triangle, actually, this week, in the grounds of the Pinderfield Hospital. And there were 9 antisocial crimes in just January 2019 alone.
There were some young kids there mugging people. They call it Rahulastapus. I don't know if that's going to catch on. Now, I go to Wikipedia about most towns I come to, and most of them are quite complimentary about the towns, but the Wake... You know, you can go to the shit towns website to find out stuff about the towns, but I mean, usually Wikipedia's quite kind, but there's a bit in the Wikipedia of Wakefield saying the number of thefts from a vehicle offences and theft of a vehicle per 1,000 of the population was 7.9 and 3.9 systematically compared to the national average of 6.3 and 2.3. So your car crime is 1.5 per person's worse than the national average, and someone thought that was worth putting on Wikipedia. So that is, you should be pleased with yourself. Though violence versus another person is 15 compared to the national average of 16.7. Boo, you must try harder. Try harder, Wakefield. You'll be glad to hear your sexual offences are in line with the national average. Terrific. The big news is the ABC cinema is not being demolished currently. Might be soon. But, you know, if you start knocking down all the empty businesses in Wakefield, there's not going to be much left. So it's... do be careful. It's a beautiful city. Do come and visit. And, of course, it's Wakefield Prison, which has had some inhabitants I don't think I really want to talk about. I believe Dr. Harold Shipman killed himself in Wakefield, and, you know, I can understand why now I've been here. Wakefield Prison. Gave us the song, Here We Go Round the Mulberry Bush, didn't it? That comes from Wakefield. There was a mulberry tree in the exercise yard of Wakefield Prison that died in May 2019. It's just died. I just didn't live to see... Just everything goes wrong here. Even the mulberry bush thought, fuck it, can't stand living in Wakefield any longer. I've put up with a lot of people around here, but now it's time to go. So let's not go into that. So, before I crack on, I will just say that I will be in the foyer after the show. I'm very happy to say hello, have a selfie, sign your bosoms, sir. I just can see the Batman T-shirt, so I'm assuming... I can't see any more than that, but I'm assuming there's some bosoms under that. Makes sense. I am selling some stuff, so I'll quickly tell you what I'm selling, just so you've got an idea. My new emergency questions book, which I think we'll see a bit more of in this interview, is available. It's 1,001 emergency questions in there you can try at home on your friends. I've also got the previous two emergency questions books. There's got 500 each in these. There's regular emergency questions and Christmas emergency questions, because it's never too soon for Christmas, is it? That's the way I look at it. That's, when you think about it, it's every day's Christmas somewhere in the world, isn't it? So it's... those are on offer. If you buy all three together, you can save about £13. There's my book, How Not to Grow Up, which Ricky Wilson, during his interview, said had turned his life around. So... Christ knows what his life was like before he read this. I mean, I don't... It could turn your life around in the wrong direction. It's about the year I turned for it. I usually sell about 3 copies of that. I sold about 50 copies of this in the Leeds. Nearly ran out. And there's some DVDs as well. There is 2 shows, Happy Now and Lord of the Dance Settee. Very proud of both those shows. I've got 1,000 of each of those in my garage. So if you buy both of those, they're only £15. It's very cheap. No one wants DVDs anymore. And I've got my new DVD, Ofrig, I'm 50, which we only made a very few copies of. And that's got 2 shows and 4 discs altogether. And also, if you remember the show Fist of Fun, that is available. That's both series of Fist of Fun available on DVD there. The BBC wouldn't bring this out themselves. They said it was too funny. I want to give the other shows a chance. So me and Stuart Lee and Chris Evans, not that one, had to buy this from the BBC ourselves. It cost us £50,000 just to buy the rights to put this out. Nice if you bought that. Some of the money from this will go to Stuart Lee. Even though the same amount of money will go to me, I'd still prefer it if you didn't buy that. If you want to help out the podcast, we've also got some Rahulastapa stickers for £2. There's a great one with an Amstrad emailer that I've stuck over the back of my Apple computer, which is fine until I took it in to be repaired, and the man looked quite annoyed. I've got three different badges. One of them's a motorcycling one, a couple of ones from this podcast. But anyway, let's crack on with the show. I'll see you after the show if you want to say hello. That would be lovely. Staying in Wakefield tonight. And the hotel costs £32 each. £32. So I'm very much looking forward to my night. We're not in London anymore, but I've travelled the country, and the last time I paid £32 for a hotel was in about 2004. So, and that was in above a pub where someone the door had clearly been kicked in and repaired several times. So, fingers crossed, might not be in London ever again, and I don't live in London. So anyway, my guest this week. He's probably best known as Windy in The Day They Came to Suck Out Our Brains. That's why we're here, to see, find out all about that. And we will find out all about that. Will you please welcome the amazing Rob Rouse, ladies and gentlemen? Rob Rouse. Sit down. Make yourself at home.
Hello.
Hello there, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm very well indeed.
Good, good.
I'd like to start with, I brought you some corporate gifts.
Have you? Good.
Because I think that's, I listen to this podcast many times, yeah. And you never get given things.
No.
So I thought you deserve some corporate gifts.
Oh, that's nice.
And you were just talking about every day's Christmas. So I brought you some presents. Corporate gifts.
Good. In Let's this, see what they are before we this... go, ah, I could be a lump of shit, probably. Here's some poo I did earlier. Thank you.
Do you know, I'll take them back, actually. You don't need them. You're close.
Some rhubarb?
Lump of poo wasn't, as a marker.
Yeah.
It's in the target. You're not far off. The first one.
It's a Tesco bag for life bag, I have to tell the people at home.
So. Which looks like it's on its last legs as well. Does that mean it's almost dead?
Yeah, but you can take that back and replace that with another one.
But does anyone? No, that's the inherent flaw with them. But yes, so the first one, here we go. That's for you, Richard.
Thank you.
That is... Can you guess what it is?
It looks like basil.
No.
Okay. Is it marijuana?
No. That's the next one. It's a Brussels sprout plant.
Oh, is it?
You.
Thank you.
And I don't give these out willy-nilly, Rich.
Okay.
I don't just give these to any Tom, Dick and Harry, only to very special people. You're there's my neighbour Rosemary, she's got one.
Okay.
And my mother-in-law, Jean the Bean, she's, you don't know her, she's got one. But you, Jean the Bean and Rosemary, the only people with the Brussels sprout plant that I grew from a special seed.
Thank you.
That sounds rude,
what
doesn't
it? Special seed.
Very
was
special
it a, was
seed.
Was it not a Brussels sprout seed?
Yeah. Well, it's hard to tell, it was very dark, But that's your... Do you like Brussels sprouts?
Yeah, I do like Brussels sprouts.
There you go. Well, you're in for a treat.
How many
there.
Sprouts do I get off one plant?
Fucking millions, mate, off
okay,
that.
Cool.
I tell you. Look at the quality of that. And that's it's none of your shit. That's growing in Peak District soil.
Good.
So that'll, you'll... I reckon at least, it's about 20 farts of sprout, isn't it? I reckon world record-breaking attempt cool. in that very plant there.
I don't need any help. Today,
we're just, have you been
I had lentil soup for my wife made lentil
Ooh,
soup.
That's gonna she, be trouble.
When she knows I'm going to be on the road and staying in a hotel,
yeah,
she always makes sure I have some.
But then
legumes.
You've only spent £32 on the hotel.
Yeah, exactly.
You've just explained, so fart away.
Yeah,
I will. For £32.
I will probably improve the room. Let's say, what did you do?
Room service.
Well, thank you. That's
your first corporate gift.
Well, that's the first. That's
yeah,
very
second
nice.
One. Again, this is. I just brought a slightly smaller plant out of a Tesco's bag, and everyone laughed at it. That
comedy's easy, isn't it?
Yeah,
comedy's really
thing.
Easy.
Yeah, isn't it? that is a chili plant.
Oh, I love chilies.
Homegrown from a very special seed, Richard. Okay. A very special spicy seed, that
good.
One.
Nice.
And that is a Bangalore Whippet's Tail, because you're in the north. Chili. Do we have any chili fans out there? Yeah. Ah, right. The men sitting on these circular cushions. do you know much? Do you know what? I've not had grown a Bangalore Whippet's Tail. Do you know how many Scoville units that one is? No. We don't know. We don't
just,
know.
We just like them. We don't know enough about them. We don't know the statistics.
So that's a Bangalore Whippet's Tail. So
good. Well, I look forward to that.
That should fruit. I'm going to say August.
Okay. I'll be in Edinburgh, but that's fine.
Well, the stroke September. And then the final one is... again. Well, I didn't think you would get that kind of reaction. That is, I'm reliably informed that this, grown from seeds again, yes. Very, very special very seed, special Richard. Seed. And this is a bonsai tree, Danielson.
Wow.
That's a bonsai tree grown from a seed. And I got them...
It's a little limp.
It is a little limp.
The limpest tree I've ever seen.
We should have watered them. They need water. Oh, shit, I've got water all over my legs. Let's give them a little bit of water. And by the end of the podcast, because it goes on now, what, 17 hours this?
Yeah, we're a long
it'll
time.
Be absolutely ready to... Sorry, I've just squirted your foam there as well. Now, so, is it a 10? Is it waterproof?
It is waterproof, yes.
Oh, there we go. My jeans aren't. But, yeah, that'll be... That you've just got to look after that, like Mr. Okay. Miyagi. You've got to tend it regularly.
Yeah.
I mean, it says bonsai tree.
Aren't trees more kind of barky?
Yeah, I think they are, but they've got to grow from a plant into a tree, haven't they? Okay. Has anyone ever grown a bonsai tree from seeds? Yeah. What the fuck do you know then? There we go. Sitting there like you're experts on bonsai. That's not a bonsai. It fucking is. It said it was on the packet. And I got that, the seeds, yeah. in Amsterdam.
Okay.
I got them in Amsterdam when my wife took me there for my birthday recently. So that's genuinely a bonsai tree. So I hope that survives, and let me know how you get on with it.
I will. Badly, I expect, because I kill most things.
Well, I think bonsai...
I'm amazed my kids have survived, but... we'll see how we do with
the several murder attempts.
just incompetence rather than deliberate murder.
Well, as long as they're still there, you know, you count them in, count them out.
I would do.
You've done your job as a parent, haven't you?
So, what do you remember about being in the day they came to suck out our brains? This was an internet comedy, right? James Wren, do you remember it?
James Wren?
James Wren, Richard Glover.
I worried that you were going to start asking me things about
it stuff wasn't that long
I
ago.
Remember it.
I did a thing with
I
them.
I can't even remember jokes I've done.
No.
People tell me jokes that I did that I've forgotten.
Yeah. Well, you were Windy.
I was Windy.
Might have been the Sprouts.
Could have been. What was it called again?
The day they came to suck out our brains. I mean, it wasn't that long ago.
They must have sucked mine out because I have absolutely no memory of that whatsoever.
Okay, it's good to have so much stuff
and
in your CV.
It was on the radio?
No, I think it was an internet filmed... series, I think. I think you were
I mean,
the
I
star
started
of it.
In 1998, and that was pre-internet, wasn't it?
I know, but this was in about 2005 or 2006.
I'm like, sorry, Rich, it's gone.
This is going to be a great interview.
It's gone, mate, yeah. It's gone. Just show me pictures and see if
Kay
you
Mellor can still remember that every detail she felt of each character she created over the last 50 years.
Not me, Rich. I can't fucking remember anything, pal. Ask me what I have for lunch.
I don't want to. It was probably this.
That's the pressure off because I can't remember.
Look, you started out as a geography teacher. Do you remember that?
No. No. Yeah, I did. I started as a geography teacher in Sheffield. But it was a series of defaults, my life, to that point. Because I think, like most kids, when you do your careers advice thing, you haven't got a clue what you want to be because you're a child, aren't you, for Christ's sake? That's the thing they forget at careers meetings. I'm a child. And also, like most of us, we've got this kind of genuine... it's an innate knowledge that ultimately work is shit, isn't it? It's not something we actually want to do. Like, as most of us, if you've got families, you both work if you're in a partnership, aren't you? You both work in order to earn money to pay for childcare so you can go to work... to earn more money for childcare so you can go to work. And you do that one for 50 years and then you die. And that's life, isn't it? And most of us as teenagers, we've got a good idea of that. So yeah. Careers advice is I couldn't lock into it. So I decided that my dad had just been sacked from his job at the time. And I remember thinking, I don't want to get sacked. So I thought I'll be a teacher because they need teachers. And then I thought, I don't know what to do because I completely bulged up the A-levels. Because I did quite well in my GCSEs because I was the second year when they made them easy because the government wanted them to work. And I said, I don't know what to do because I was 15. I was an idiot. I lived in a village. And just watching Vic and Bob and the young ones in the evenings on VHS. And my mum and dad said, well, just keep your options open. Do maths, chemistry and physics. I went, okay, as if that would be easy. And they were all really fucking hard.
Yeah.
They are, aren't they? Shockingly hard. And I thought physics would be like space and stuff, but yeah, it wasn't. No. It was maths. And that was a fucking horrible shock. Because I was already failing maths. So I was staring down the barrel of a kind of a double horrific failure. And I thought, you know, it's how old are you when you do your A-levels? I can't remember that either.
18 when you do 16.
16 when you start doing it. I thought, shit, my life's over. This is a mess. And then I managed to drop physics. There was some timetable issue, and I took geography.
Right.
And found out that appeared to be common sense, because it's basically geographies. Anyone do geography? Physical geography is mountains and rivers, isn't it? Basically, mountains slip down and get washed into the river, the sea. It's fucking over. That's geography. There's rain and stuff like that. There's details, but ultimately it's just hills slipping back out into the sea. And then human geography is just asking people pointless questions in shopping centres. So I got through. And then... And to console myself while I was struggling and failing at maths, and I was doing a lot of Lego because I lived in a village and girls hadn't been invented. And then when I was doing the A-level general studies exam, there was like an exploded picture of a sewing machine. And I thought, this is like Lego. So I was able to do that.
Right.
And then there was creative writing and art in it as well, and the art teacher said you should do art, and the English teacher said you should do English, and I went, I'm going to do maths, chemistry, physics, and keep my options open. and so I scooted through on that, and that got me into Sheffield,
right.
And then I basically got drunk for 3 years, Richard, so don't ask me about any of that. I can't remember that either, but I had a great time, met a lot of fun people,
yeah.
And then got bullied into doing a play in the third year after a breakup. And we did The Country Wife, which I found quite impenetrable, because I'm also thick. That's the other thing as well. And I am a card-carrying thick person. I'd show you that card, but I forgot it because I'm thick. And then... Anyway, the first night I was on stage and the set fell down. And it was just me on stage as Harry Horner. And it was almost like Harold Lloyd. The flats just fell down around me. So I just had to keep improvising on my own. And the laughs that I got doing that felt particularly juicy compared to the ones in the play. I mean, because it was... I mean, Christ, it was tedious. And I couldn't understand it myself, and I was saying the lines. And then something inside me clicked, and then the next year, some friends from the drama group were running a stand-up night for charity, and they said I should do it, and I did it. And I thought, I'm moving to London because that's the only place you can do it, and started doing it.
So were you teaching geography in London at the same time?
No, I did 2 days of supply teaching, right, having fully qualified, which absolutely sealed the deal that I didn't want to be a teacher. Absolutely sealed it. And I don't side with that kind of thing that, you know, when people say, you know, there's a fallback joke, isn't there, if you've been a teacher, saying, you know, kids are, I don't want to say the C-bomb, feels too early, it's a Sunday. And we're in Wakefield. There's different social mores about dropping the C-bomb.
Yeah.
We're not in fucking London now. And I remember, it was supply, and it was a Friday afternoon, and I was bussed in to a school on the edge of Sheffield somewhere to do a third year geography class. And it was absolute bedlam. It was insane. And within 2 minutes, there was a fist fight that I had to break up. And then I took one lad out for something else, took him outside, said, go wait outside, I'll talk to you in a minute. Tried to just kind of somehow lock down the violence in the room. And in the intervening time that I got, he must have had half a minute in the corridor, and he completely covered himself head to toe in quink, you know, the fountain pen ink. And he was dark blue, except for his eyes. And his hands, everything was dark blue. And I went outside to give him like some form of a bollocking. And I couldn't. I just ended up in hysterics because this... And he was permanent ink as well. So he was navy blue. But, I mean, he could wash that, he'd try and get that off with cold tar soap, and he'd been a smurf for at least a month. And I just thought, like, there's something inherently absolutely hilarious yeah. about dicking about at school, isn't there? And that's what yeah, it was always so much fun to do. And I was always one of those people who could muck around and could always just about get away with it. Yeah. And just sneak it round. I think. But I found it so funny, and I was just laughing with this boy in the corridor, who was blue. Yeah. And I said to him, I'm not going to tell you off because you've actually helped me. Work out that I want to move to London and be a comedian. So go back in there. We just got to get through the next 45 minutes and then I'm out of here. And you're going to be blue for at least a month. And then, and that was it. That was the decision made for me. And I've never looked back.
Imagine if that kid hadn't covered himself in ink. He'd be a silly jog fitting.
I can't remember his name, but I thank him for doing it from the bottom of my heart.
Weirdly, I was thinking about this the other day. I changed my A levels like about a term into.
Did you?
Yeah, I was doing history, maths, double maths, in fact, and physics.
You fucking lunatic! What were you thinking?
Well, I was quite good at maths, but I was thinking I was going to do maths at university.
Yeah,
and like about.
I might have to give you a wedgie now.
Well, but I wasn't. I wasn't really that good. My dad had done maths, and I thought I should do like. And I was all right at maths, but I wasn't that good.
I feel like I'm in a stress dream.
And then. But it's an amazing, bold decision I made, half a term into the first term.
It's a terrible decision, Richard.
No, I suddenly went, I don't want to do... I hated physics, so why am I doing physics? Well, I hate it. I don't want to do maths at university. And so I changed from physics to English and decided to do history at university. So, because I was already doing history and I was good at history. But if I hadn't made that decision, my life would have been completely different. I wouldn't have gone to Oxford if I'd done maths, because I wasn't very good in history and things like geography. You can... get by
so
with
you,
just
you ballsed
being...
up and went to Oxford.
Yeah. Well, I made a decision, and I was just thinking how much that decision, halfway through, as a 16-year-old would have been, that completely changed the rest of my life. I wouldn't have met Stuart. I wouldn't have done, I wouldn't have done any of the stuff I did.
It's crazy, isn't it?
And something in me went, no, you're going to, to make that decision to change your A-levels while you've started your A-levels is kind of a massive deal.
Yeah, well, certainly the decision I made stopped me crying every night.
Yeah. Well, I think I hated
physics.
I think, like you, I hated physics.
Do you think Brian... Have you interviewed Professor Brian Cox?
Not yet, no, I'm hoping.
You will do one day.
Yeah,
when he comes on, can you ask him if he secretly absolutely hates physics? because he thought, it'd be all about looking at the universe. And they maybe just cut the edit after the end of each scene. You know when he stares longingly into the distance for a bit too long? Being all handsome, and he's actually just thinking, oh, fucking hate physics, it's all maths.
I think everyone must hate physics. And maybe when it gets to quantum physics, it gets so boring, it gets interesting again. It might be that you round the past infinity thing.
You've got to get to the Hawking level, haven't you?
Yeah.
Other than that, it's so fucking boring. It's just scientific calculator stuff.
Yeah. What an amazing thing for both of us to make that decision. Both of us decided we didn't want to do physics anymore, and our lives changed.
Aren't we amazing?
We are
Richard.
Amazingly fucking stupid.
Aren't we amazing?
We are amazing. I'm going to try and get this water open without tipping it over myself.
Yeah, no, I can help you if you like.
It's all right, I've done it.
I'm here to help. Aren't you amazing?
It doesn't matter. Aren't I amazing? I've wet myself.
I love all this merch you've
Thank
got
you,
here
yeah.
as well. And. Because I was thinking of watching it at the side of the stage, thinking, no, you're a very funny man. But also, I do like this new smart image.
Thank you. Well, you know.
Yeah, you look like...
It won't last.
It looks like we're about to have a business lunch together. You look very smart.
And I was going to take my tie off to be a bit more casual
like
with you.
I'd like you to keep it done up really tight.
It's really tight. Yeah.
Keep it done up really tight, Rich.
But doesn't he look smart, ladies and gentlemen? You look great. We were saying backstage. Do you talk about your health and fitness on here?
I've done a little bit.
You look
about
bloody
it.
Magic, Rich.
Thank you.
I just want to say you look bloody wonderful.
Well,
and I'm delighted for you.
All you have to do is stop drinking alcohol, Wakefield. That's
you
it.
Do.
That's all you have to do. And stop eating chocolate and walk the dog for an hour a day. That's all you have to do, and you'll be fine. I've been doing a park run. Have you ever done park runs? Have you heard of this?
No, my knees are terrible.
Are they?
And I think I've got arthritis in my big toes.
Have you? Okay, well, don't
got it all going on.
You just run 5 kilometres. I've only done two, but I did the first one as me one and the second one as me two. And me two...
Oh, Christ.
Me two took 2 minutes off me one's time.
Oh, God.
But during the run, he lost... I had those earbud things, those really expensive Apple things. And me too, lost the fucking box for the... I've got the things, but I thought, I'm going to lose these earbuds one day. I've lost the fucking box. Me too, so I'm very upset
I was thinking about you one and you, me too.
Yeah.
I was playing snooker on a 6-foot table with my son this morning.
Yeah, oh, that's weird, playing with someone else.
Oh, it is weird, isn't it?
And with a child, that's doubly weird. Who you related to, that's weird. What a weird thing to do.
It's exactly the same thought, and I thought, the fact that you managed to do an entire series of playing snooker with yourself and actually stay out of an asylum.
It's been touch and go.
It's remarkable. You're amazing.
Thank you. I'm amazing. I don't think many people listen to that one, but so I can get away with all. So I say all sorts of things in that. I think, well, no one's going to listen to it.
I'm delighted. But having obviously followed your life vicariously through your podcast, I'm delighted that you've got a family. Because it struck me. I mean this from my heart. Because me and my son were playing snooker this morning, and apropos of nothing, we were both just in our pants because we both got up.
Yeah.
And that's the great thing about having kids, is we're just both playing in our pants, not even thinking about it. And my lovely wife watched and said, "Why are you both in your pants?" And we just started playing snooker. And it's understood. That's the great thing about having kids, is that when you'll be in a situation that someone might walk in and go, "What the fuck is happening here? There's two men playing snooker in their pants." And with kids, it's just fine. We're just playing. Yeah, we just started playing. We haven't put trousers on yet. Yeah. Simple as that. And it's wholesome. But whilst I felt the tension, felt it nearly popping. But whilst I was playing snooker, I had a profound feeling of, oh, fucking hell, Richard must have been so sad playing snooker on his own. He was just lonely. And I would have come and played snooker with you, if you've asked.
I don't want to play against other people. What's the point of that?
Did you? We need to get into what that's about, mate.
Well, see, that was all my teen. So I was in my relationship with my wife when I started doing the podcast, but when I was a teenager, I used to spend hours playing against myself.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, that's normal. That's just healthy, isn't it?
Yeah. But I played Sabuto against myself.
When you mean... Oh, right, I thought you meant playing...
Amongst yourself
as a euphemism. Of course.
I did a bit of that, but I mainly played Sabuto.
I heard you were something of a master at it.
That's what they named after me. I played Sabuto against myself, did all these leagues, kept all the statistics. York City always won every single match.
How old were you at this point?
28 years old. Now, I was... I'm quite old. I was like in teenage, probably 12 to... Actually, because I supported Leeds United to begin with when I was younger. And then I grew up and moved on to a proper football team, York City. But this season I thought, York are so bad now. Maybe I'll just start... Leeds look like they're going to go up. I'll start supporting them. The minute I started supporting them again, then they didn't go up. So I think I'll stay away from Leeds. And give them a chance of succeeding. I saw Leeds play Bristol City that was the first football match.
It's a real game, or is it?
Yeah, real one. First, they drew 2-2. I was sitting amongst the Bristol City fans because we lived in Somerset.
Oh, right, so this is real football.
And I hid my Leeds United badge underneath my jacket so the Bristol fans wouldn't beat me up. What an idiot I was. It's the other way around, isn't it? I think I had quite a happy childhood, but I was quite obsessed with that kind of statistical thing, and I was quite obsessed. You know, I could pass a lot of time in an imaginary world, even if it was quite a dull one.
No, that set
me in good stead as an adult who plays myself at snooker for a living.
Yeah, it was all training, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I'm semi-professional. I've been paid to play snooker against myself by a transgressive art festival. I mean, I'm sure I've told this story before.
Wow!
But I've been doing it for a while. Someone from a transgressive art festival rang me up and said, "Will you come and play snooker against yourself?" I said, "Yeah, what's the other sort of stuff going on?" There'll be someone cooking and eating their own shit. Yeah. There'll be someone...
And you thought, I'm in.
There'll be someone...
Why do I sign up?
...doing karaoke with their vagina. The woman before me was producing baby teeth out of her vagina and then doing stories about
them. Can we just stop? These are too many things. There are too many things that haven't been unboxed here.
Well, I don't know much more than I'm telling you.
I'm just rewinding to how does someone do karaoke with their vagina?
Well, they sit in a chair.
Yep.
And then they play some... They play a... So lip-syncing, I suppose they would. I didn't watch it. I didn't personally go and watch it because I was on at the same time, but she did pop into the dressing room I was sharing with her to piss in a bit. Because it was 20... She was doing 24 hours. So I was in the dressing room waiting to go on to play snooker against myself, and a woman came in and sat on a bin and pissed in it. And to be honest, that was the least offensive thing that happened in the... And then I played myself at snooker. For an hour.
I'm just trying to still keep in my mind that this is an arts festival.
It was about an hour, and people, like, some people came, like, about, you know, I thought, oh, some of my fans will come. About four of my fans came. And then the other people were either people who were coming to see the other transgressive art or the other transgressive artists.
Yeah.
Loads of them walked out because it was too boring. And I thought, this is too transgressive for the people. I mean, the idea is it's irritating.
You should have done some charades with your foreskin or something.
You haven't even got your cock out, mate. Yeah. It's get your cock out. Use it as a cue.
Yeah, replace the brown ball with the shit. Come on. We need something to get on board with here.
So
I'm
not going
to cut with it. At least play snooker with it.
I was too transgressive for the transgressive artist, but I got paid £350, and so I am a semi-professional self-playing snookerist. And I told my wife one day I would get paid.
And then finally, finally out of the basement.
Yeah. I'm in the attic now. So it was the basement before. But where were we? Let's talk a bit about you. So you won a competition quite early on. You got starting stand-up and you won So You Think You're Funny.
Yes.
That was quite... Was that quite early
that
on?
That was 1998. Yeah.
So how long had you been going?
6 or 7 months.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
Who did you beat your year
in? Who did I beat? Oh, God. Who went on to be a big... final were... So Dan Antopelski was in the final.
Oh, yes, he's good.
Cary Quinlan.
Oh, yes, fantastic.
Reginald D. Hunter.
Wow.
A guy called Moz.
Okay.
Tim Barnes.
Oh, yes.
I can't remember after that.
Yeah, but you beat all of them.
But and neither Reg or Dan were placed.
Oh, really?
So there was some administrative error and I won it. But... And Graham Norton was the host compere. Oh, wow. And Bob Mortimer was in the judging panel. So I was pretty starstruck.
Yeah.
Absolutely starstruck. And he's done this as well, hasn't he?
Yes.
I love that one.
He's incredible, incredible.
The more they do, him and Vic.
Yeah.
I just think they're beautiful, aren't they? Special. Special
they
creatures.
They are, and I think especially, and I love Vic as well, but Bob especially, I think, is...
They're both remarkable in their own way, aren't they? Have you listened to the Chain Reaction interview where... does Bob interview Vic? I think it is.
I haven't heard, actually. No.
It is, it's still on the BBC, whatever it sounds up or whatever. I've listened to it, must have listened to it a dozen times when I'm driving along. It's lovely. It's just great. Bob interviews his comedy hero, and it's Vic. I know, it's gorgeous, and it is funny... as you like from the start, right through. It's brilliant. And I, whenever I'm in our spare room, I think of you and Bob in my mind's eye on the Rahulustapur stage because I decorated the spare room listening to it. Yeah.
I love when things have an association with something you've listened to in that place.
I reckon bits of that, you know, episodes of this podcast have stopped me going absolutely mad driving up and down the motorways of Great Britain doing stand-up.
Yes, it's good for that. Definitely. I mean, but all podcasts are pretty good for that. Well, let's talk about your podcast. We'll get on to your other career. I was listening to you as we were driving here with you and your wife.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, oh, this, because you were talking about a play you were doing together. I thought, oh, this must be the most recent one. And then it turns out that you haven't done that podcast for maybe a year now.
Yeah, we've done about 30-odd episodes of it. And we decided, because I started doing one myself called the Rob Rouse Podcast. And first episode, I cut Gaz Coombs' hair. No, sorry, he cut my hair in my garage and played a song at the end.
Okay.
The second episode, me and Tom Wrigglesworth assembled a chainsaw and chopped down a tree in our garden, which was great fun. Third episode...
Getting people round to do chores for you.
I was getting a lot of stuff sorted out around the house. I had a cracking electrician round.
Rewired the place.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so how do you? Oh, that's
the third episode. Third episode was I joined in on Helen's exercise class and vomited in a hedge. It's a cracker. That I should put them back up again. And the I can't remember what happened. And then I did about seven, and then and I really enjoyed it. It's a lot of editing and work, isn't it? I put it out, and
not
and
for
it,
me, mate. No, I don't.
No, of course. Why now? You've got staff. You've got people on board. That's the sound of one of your minions laughing there in the background as he edits yet another award-winning podcast. Well, I lost my train of thought. Yeah, I did seven, and then it got on new and noteworthy on iTunes, and I got all excited about it. And then I realised I couldn't be arsed, like, with the work. Yeah. And other stuff happened, and, you know, there was swimming lessons or things, you know, drop-offs and pick-ups needed doing. And I ran out of time, and it was exhausted by it. And then Helen said, why don't we do one together, like me and you? And so we came up with this idea of doing the date night podcast, because we've been together at that point, 13, 14 years. And thought that you don't often spend enough time with your partner having fun. So we thought we'll go and do stuff, turn it into a podcast. And we did all sort of, like, we went horse riding and just, we live in the Peak District. So we just went and did all, so anything we could do for free. We went to a pitch and putt and saw Chris Waddle there.
Okay.
Chris Waddle. So that became an open letter to Chris Waddle, the whole podcast. And didn't reply, Chris, but we're still waiting. And we did all sorts. We did life drawing with each other in front of the fire. We recorded a Christmas special where we did a version of Rage Against the Machine's Killing in the Name, which we recorded in our own garage. And I'll stand by, let's say this on record. If you download that episode, or you can listen to it, however you get them, Helen's vocal stands right alongside Zach de la Roche's vocal. Because the way she delivers the final riposte with the incendiary mofo at the end, it sends a shiver down my... Sometimes, if I need a pick-me-up driving to a gig, I'll bang that episode on and forward whine. And we raised, I think, £15 for shelter with that episode. Just stand by. Because I really... really admired what Rage did when they did it for Shelter, and it was a genuine, heartfelt homage. And we called in a favour from Mr. Coombs, and he mastered it for us in his home studio and sent it back. But Helen's vocal on it is astonishing. Absolutely. One take, and she was done. We recorded it live in the garage with another bloke, Rich, who played the drums, who's a dad from primary school.
Well, in the one I listened to, which is the last one, I think you should put another one because we
do need to do another one.
Well, because in this one, you're talking about how you went to the seaside and just got some whelks off the seashore.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then cooked them, and then the barbecue went out, and so then took them home and then fried them in beer and ate them and didn't take all the guts out of some of them.
No, yes.
And then you were seriously ill, and then that's the last podcast.
That is the last podcast.
And it hasn't been one for a year. Yeah, I might have to go to the doctors. I'm feeling pretty bad. And they go, yeah, we have to get you. You have to ring up at 8 o'clock in the morning.
It might be
like, and sadly, rubber.
Yeah,
ass
no, that was a mistake. Whenever I'm outside, I do go because when we moved up to the Peak District from London, which was just a cold-hearted career move, if I'm honest, just an industry move to get out of London and to create industry buzz.
Yeah,
but it backfired. But either way, I've got a garden. And a greenhouse, hence the corporate gifts. And so we were on holiday in the caravan in North Wales. And whenever I'm in the countryside, I found I go a bit feral. So when we moved up in 2010, my Edinburgh show was about eating roadkill, and I had a pheasant, then a rabbit, and then it culminated. It was July, and I needed an end for the show. But by that point, I'd lost my mind on roadkill. I was scanning the verges for it all the time. Just free protein. It's exciting. It's nature's bounty, ladies and gentlemen. And I was driving over Snake Pass, and if anyone knows it, literally there's a crest, and the sun was just gleaming over the top of Snake Pass. I was heading down to the Manchester Comedy Store. And on the crest of Snake Pass, there was I saw a recently knocked-down sheep. So I stopped the car, put the hazards on. I'm not an idiot. popped the boot up and went and inspected the meat, and it was a black sheep, and it wasn't a lamb. It was like a pretty fully grown. It wasn't mutton. It still would have been classed as lamb, but it had clearly just been hit by a truck because its head was on backwards. But which is a clear sign. It had a tangle with at least a ton of metal. But its eyes were glassy and it was still warm, which is a good sign. So I thought, here we go, barbecue on me on Sunday. So I hoiked it into the boot of the family Passat. Which I've not thought about this for a long time, which is a black car as well, which will come into play later on. Put the tonneau cover over, also black, it's an estate. Drove it to the Manchester Comedy Store, parked in the bottom of a queue park. There are other car parks available. And it was the hottest day of the year. It was about 27 degrees. Obviously, some wild eaters in here. You're thinking, oh, that's gonna just save infuse the meat with a lovely frisson of flavour, steeping its own juices. What the hell I was doing. And I walked to the store, I did the early and the late show, left, and it was a late, late show at that point, it finished about 2:30, walked back to the car park, to the basement, and excited to see tomorrow's barbecue. I popped the boot up and took a breath in. And immediately vomited to my boots. Just literally, it was instant. And and I couldn't stop being sick. And this sheep was now, I'd say, about twice as big as it was when I put it in there. Like a great big black woolly balloon. And its limbs were rolling on its back with its limbs splayed out. And it was at such an internal pressure that just tiny movements, it would just, you could hear it creaking like. And if it moved a bit too much, and the smell was, it's impossible to describe. Anyone who walked into the car park would immediately have been sick. And I try and sometimes smells you can almost visualise them. It just must have just poured out like an immediate, like a nuclear explosion. It was horrific. Yeah. And I drove out of Manchester with all the windows down in the car. I was sobbing at this point because it's just just the futility of it all. Well, wretched. Out of the window, and every time I went round a corner, it would and release. Oh shit, that's water! Right. And release even more gas. And it's like I wet myself now. It's dribbling down front of the stage. And I drove all the way back up Snake, about halfway up Snake Pass through Glossop, and heaved it out into a lay-by. And I remember as I threw it, just. It would. I had to swing it to get some momentum up to get it over the fence, and with each, and as I let it go, it, and then it bounded down the hill, and I think I wept again, and then and drove home in a real state, but. And I remember as I was putting all of my clothes into the washing machine. Do you ever do that when you got so dirty, you just take everything off, buy the washing, pants, everything, put it all in, bang it straight on a boil wash?
I'm not sure anyone else has been through this experience. Not sure.
But then as the washing machine door clicked shut, I thought, well, I've got an ending. But... And then the clean-up operation the next day was horrific because obviously, I told Helen about it in the morning. And oh, I haven't told you this. She is a lifelong vegetarian. Okay. She's never ever eaten meat.
So you're going to eat this sheep on your own. That was the plan.
She was absolutely horrified. Yeah. And it was a long afternoon with rubber gloves and bleach. It was like trying to clean up after an episode of Dexter. It was insane. It's clearing up, essentially, to some of the, I don't know what the liquids were, Richard, but they all had to go. And constant weekly Febrezing and shake and vac. And it's now done 168,000 miles. And I think tonight, so I'm looking for £5,000 for it. It's got a dent on every panel.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
How did the Welks go? Did you recover?
So, we were talking about the Welks, weren't we? Sorry, we've gone off on a tangent.
But you think someone who'd been through the sheep experience might not have eaten Welks off a beach?
You think I'd have known better, wouldn't you?
You think someone who'd gotten a whole show about roadkill would think, maybe I should look into the health and safety
Absolutely.
Implications.
Yeah. But, you know, as comics, if we get a show out of it, we're happy, aren't we? Yeah, we're happy. I did the version of that show in Nottingham, and I was driving back and just coming up another way into Sheffield. I genuinely thought all my Christmases had come at once because there was an entire deer. Again, same scenario, head on backwards. Glassy eye, still warm to the touch. Bingo, we're in. And sadly, I didn't have the physical strength to heave it into the boot of the Passat because the conditions were perfect, Richard. The meat was fresh, it was still warm. It was -2 degrees. So, I mean, perfect. It wasn't going to go wrong on the journey. I was 10 minutes from home, and I thought, if I can get this in the boot of the Passat, and I can drop it down at the village butcher's, or at least knock on his door Sunday morning and say, look, mate, there's a whole venison here. We could have half each. It's supposed to be worth a grand.
Yeah.
And I couldn't. And I got home, and I was really upset, probably sobbing at the loss. And I considered going back to the site at 3 a.m. I wasted half an hour umming and ahhing, I think was crucial. And I filled the chainsaw up with petrol and I was going to take it. I can't remember whether I woke Helen up to tell her I was very excited. Look, love, look, I know you're a vegetarian, but please understand how much venison is at stake here. And she talked me out of it, explaining to me that probably at 3 a.m, chainsawing like Leatherface through an animal with antlers the size of a cow. I mean, it's a big beast. Yeah. Trying to saw off a leg or two to take home.
Yeah.
Might not. It's hard to explain, isn't it? A traffic cop on his way home.
What about the Welks, though? What happened with
Welks? Oh, yeah, sorry, the Welks. So we were, it was last May half term, we went to the is it called the Llyn Peninsula in Wales? I've been there before. No. Incredible place. Told the caravan all the way there. The caravan's another story. But show business. Cheap caravan. It's going well. Now, we're in the Llyn Peninsula. Beautiful. It's basically the mountains go down to the sea. As I've already established in... Oh, yeah, geographically, this audience are fast, aren't they? You call back to stuff I can't even remember doing at the start of the show. You're amazing. And so it's beautiful. Mountains go... Yeah, let's fuck it off down into the sea. It's everything. All of the geography you need to know is there. Mountains slipping down into the sea. And I went out for a swim in the sea with Ronnie, one of our dogs. And I noticed when I was in there were loads of sea anemones and there were loads of limpets, and I thought it's really fresh, it's clean, that must be a good sign. Hadn't really thought that. Actually, limpets essentially live off they're cleaning the sea essentially. Yeah. Yeah. And surprised quite a few, put them in a dog shit bag, a clean one. took them back, banged them on the barbecue, and I did cook them thoroughly. So I would advise you to cook them thoroughly. Because they killed the barbecue, so I did them in a pan afterwards with some butter and garlic and some beer, which was a bit bitter. Anyway, getting bogged down. Crucially, what I didn't do was I cooked them until they came out of the shells, but what I didn't do was they've got like a half moon shape, very dark brown or black, kind of shiny looking element to them that's not the meat bit, which in hindsight I realise is all of their arse and guts. Yeah. And I'd say about 30 of them. ballpark 30. And they were the only food that Ronnie, our dog that eats nappies. They are the only food that he's refused to eat. I threw it to him, and he'll catch anything when you throw it to him. He caught it, went, no. And he's only ever done that with the really dark olives. Right. Any other food, he'll eat them. And so I threw him a second one, and he dropped that and thought, he's just not into them like olives. I like olives. I'll eat the limpets. In hindsight, wasn't a good decision. I spent the week on the campsite I spent the week in the toilet block, if I'm honest. I missed most of the holiday. Yeah. So, and then we did a podcast about it because I realised that my arse has... ruined, I'd say, 3 holidays. If I had to nail it down. And I was wondering, because I was worrying if you're going to ask me the human caterpillar question. Yeah. Because I thought, I genuinely wouldn't wish my arse on anyone to be sewn to it. Okay. Even the worst people history has known, I don't think deserve that. Wow. They've been through
enough. That's very thoughtful of you.
Yeah.
Unless you thought really hard about that, but not about not eating dead animals.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
At the sea.
There are inconsistencies to my logic. Yeah. But yeah, so we did the podcast together, which was really good. I loved doing it. It was great fun. We had a really good laugh doing it. And dude, listen to the Rage Against the Machine episode.
Yeah.
But we realised, again, it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
And if the first time you sit down to talk to your partner, life partner, is to sit down and try and take the piss out of each other, that's the first proper conversation you've had that week, then that can be a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I mean, my wife has been on this podcast with some friends, which made it a bit easier, but yeah. I think the idea of, I mean, you're working with your wife a lot. I mean, it's good because you get to see each other, but it's also, you know, I think there is that danger of working together and not separating. You've done plays together. You're doing another play in Edinburgh.
Yeah, we did our first play together last year at Edinburgh called The Ladder, which was... Helen wrote. It was great. And she... basically, one day, she was decorating a room downstairs. I don't know which episode of Rahulustapus she was listening to. But she got herself caught in the top of a decorating ladder. These kind of... You know the fold-out ones that they sort of snap together and you can have them in a V or a kind of M shape or whatever. And there's a claw that... cracks through the top on a spring, right. And it caught her little finger. Yeah, exactly. Bum twattering time, isn't it? And she was stuck in it, and she's nearly medically small, Helen. She's is that a terminology? A correct term? She's around the 5-foot mark.
Okay.
And
And she got a finger stuck in it. She couldn't reach the floor. And she was stuck in this decorating ladder for about 20 minutes with a finger stuck in it. I got back in and immediately was immensely heroic and started panicking. And we thought, right, well, the first thing we should do, because we couldn't tell whether if we open them or close them, whether it would go through a finger. Exactly. So we rang her dad, because they were his decorating ladders. Just to say, Ken, now, do we open or close these? What's going to happen to the claw? Now, he was playing snooker at the time, and, so there was no way
in
of getting
pants.
Through. Yeah, probably in his pants. Lovely callback.
Yeah, thank you.
Which would be weird. So we didn't know, and we couldn't get through to him, so we had to make a... We kind of thought about the decision, and then... And I ended up managed to take them apart with a screwdriver and we got her out of there. Right. But Helen, being the brilliant, because she's a really great writer, she's actually just got an agent for writing a kid's book. She's written a kid's book, just sat there and wrote it, banged it out on her iPad, and she's so much more disciplined than I am.
Yeah.
Just like, this doesn't go out concurrently, but you have just interviewed Kay Mellor in this same sitting. And I think that's the key
last
to brilliant. Last week. And doesn't time fly between?
Yeah, it felt like...
20 minutes that week flew by. But she thought, what would have happened if I wasn't the kind of person who would have tried to take them apart, or if our lives were different? In the same way that I remember Rich Hall telling me years ago once that the guy who apparently wrote Deliverance, he was on a canoeing holiday and he capsized and knocked himself out or something, and that's all he could remember. And he woke up and these people who, you know, I don't know, the rednecks or whatever they were called, the people who live in the countryside, basically saved his life, nursed him back to full health, drove him home with his canoe on the top of the car, took him back to his home address, dropped him off, waved him goodbye and drove off into the sunset. And he thought, what an incredible thing. But he thought, but what if they'd dragged me into the woods and fucked me up the arse? And that is writing, isn't it? That's what writing is. And apparently, that's what Rich told me. And apparently, that's how he got the idea for Deliverance. And so Helen thought, well, so what would happen if that hadn't played out that way around?
Yeah.
And I think that's often where good ideas come from,
isn't it?
It's
very much sliding doors, isn't it? It's very sliding doors without bothering to show the other side. Like all good drama.
You've got to think about sliding doors.
I do have to think about sliding doors. Hey, look, I want to quickly... you're doing another play. You tell me about the other play.
The new one's called Funny in Real Life. We're doing Edinburgh the 1st to the 18th of August.
Yep.
11:15 in the morning at the Gilded Balloon, because we like to do them in the morning because then we can go up with the kids.
Yeah.
And then actually not feel like we're ignoring them too much during the day. And it's a fun time to do anything. I think it's a fun time to do a show when everyone's fresh and they've not seen six shows. It's interesting, isn't it? But this one is about a stand-up comedian on stage talking about his wife and kids. And he thinks he's booked it for 11:15 at night, but it's actually on at 11:15 a.m, but he's trying to make the best of it. Yeah. Just to cock up with a gilded balloon. But crucially, his wife's in the audience, and he's doing... And she basically calls bullshit on his ideas and his stand-up. And so it's a long way from mine and Helen's real lives, obviously. So it's in no way, shape, or form uncomfortable or challenging to work through and devise. But no, and we just, the more we thought about it, we thought it was a fun, really fun kind of thing to explore. And we did a little 20 minutes of it at the Crucible in Sheffield in like little kind of scratch night thing. Mm-hmm. And the bones of it really worked. So we kind of thought, that's fun. So we're working on that.
Great.
And we're going to do that together. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, we'll all go. And this is coming out before Edinburgh, so do go and see that play and come and see Rahelastapur. 1:30.
Are you doing
well.
Them up there as well?
I'm doing 21 Rahelastapurs in the Edinburgh Fringe.
Jeez.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to say that. 1:30 at the New Town Theatre, 400-seater theatre. Please come. Have you booked your accommodation in Edinburgh yet this year?
Oh, we're doing a house swap this year.
Oh.
Doing a house swap.
That's
that
not
saves
fair.
Saves a shit ton of money, Rich.
It did. So much money this year, so much more expensive. Right, I've been in contact with Ian Boldsworth.
Oh, lovely.
Who, you in your early career, you did a triple act with him. And
that's right, yeah, him and John
Big
Williams.
And, Big and Daft.
That's right.
I asked him what I should ask you. I think he's using this to air some personal grievances.
I would expect nothing less.
Ask him why he thought it was acceptable to put the arms of every one of my Star Wars figures in the air every time he visited my house. Even though he knew this would devalue them significantly.
Did you hear that, Ian? That's your answer. It's funny, actually. Ian came round to interview me for his podcast, which he does on Patreon, I think it's his. And it's, so actually, the interview is behind a paywall, and he's still not sent it me to listen to because I refused to pay to listen to it. Conversation he had in our living room, and I made him three cups of tea. It's been really nice to reconnect with him after a long time. It's been really good fun, and a lot of water's under the bridge. And it was like being in a band that broke up.
And
it was really exciting at the time. I look back at it all now with real fondness, even like the arguments and the stress and the nightmares of it. Because it was really, really good fun. It was fucking crazy. Yeah. Like kind of.
Was that early days? And you just did two or three Edinburghs together.
We did three. And it was great. And Ian was telling my son, who's 11, about me putting Star Wars figures up. My son thought it was hilarious. Just thought, of course you would. And he said, "What?" Because it annoyed him. He went, "He totally got it. Every time it was great because Ian's old flat. It was like a first floor flat, and you had to go down this kind of stairwell. It had sort of like a little kind of bit around it, like almost like a big shelf that you went down through. So you're on three sides, like you're in a little theatre. And that's where all his Star Wars figures were. And every time he went out to get milk or tea bags, I'd think, well, I mean, I couldn't resist it. And just like just the Emperor. Is it the Emperor or the real baddie from Star Wars? Can't remember.
Yeah,
look, he's stood there going, looking all terrifying. Stick his arms up, he's going, and I thought it would make Ian happy when he came back in. Look how happy the Emperor is, Ian. He's going, Ian! And he absolutely hated it, which meant that it happened every time he left the house.
Of course. Notorious sexist, of course, Ian Boldsworth. If you listened to, he was a Ray Peacock, he came on the show. He got into the. We won't go into it, it's not time.
I remember he had an argument with someone in the audience.
Yeah, it was terrible. He came out very well. He's a lovely, lovely man. Ask him why he wanted to light his own farts all the time.
They blow hot and cold this room, don't they? It's just not into lighting farts. Go on. Really, honestly, how many people have lit a fart? Yeah. Thank you. A few brave souls out there. You're all, everyone's worried that there's is it you fear blowback? Is that what it's called? That somehow you've heard the story that someone sucked one in and then they exploded. Doesn't have, as long as you're wearing a stout jean, it's a great laugh. In fact, actually, if I had my phone on, we could ring Helen, and she could corroborate this story. That when we were courting, I can't remember it, but because that's the part of my life. But apparently, I used to like. We met in a shared house when I was a stand-up and she was down doing a theatre job. Apparently, I used to light my own farts with my other housemates. They were all girls as well, so I thought the gloves were off. We're doing this, and Helen remembers it to this day. That
that's what she fell in love over.
She fell in love with it
over the glare of a lit
the blue
fart.
Flame, warm, the warming blue flame of love.
All right, one more from Ian. He does send his love, by the way, to us both, which is nice of him. Ask him why he cleans his teeth till he gags, is sometimes sick before all the big and daft shows.
That was nerves. I don't do that anymore. But I used to clean my teeth. I used to be sick. Fucking hell, it's nerves, isn't it? Used to be sick every gig, every stand-up gig for the first year or so, I reckon. Right. I used to smoke as well. Which we didn't go, was not good.
Yeah.
And I was obsessed with kind of having a clear, being clear, and I'd coughed and I was sick. Oh, God. And then I'd be sick every.
I wonder why
show.
You guys broke up. I can't brush my teeth. Can't put my.
Oh, no, Ian was great while I was be sick. Yeah. He'd always hold my hair out of my eyes and rub me back.
Well, we haven't got very much time left. We'll do a little bit more. We don't want to bore the people of Wakefield.
Or
let them back out into the streets of Wakefield where anything could happen to them.
Should we just stay in here?
They're safe in here.
Can I ask a question to the good people of Wakefield? When I came in, I came past Pizza Hut. And there was like a scene out of an American movie. There was people sat all along the wall of Pizza Hut with cars. Is there a thing happening or is it just people who like to watch cars take the roundabout? Can you explain what is it? Is it like a meeting point?
Every Saturday night.
And what happens?
They just meet.
So So basically, in Wakefield on a Sunday night, did it start off small or has it always been a huge event? Like, did some people just start, for one day there was two cars in Pizza Hut and people went, oh, this looks like good, what are you doing here? Just park up here and we watch the cars take that roundabout and then we just guess whether they go left or right or the other roundabout. And it's just become a thing. Is it... Does some shit go down there or something? Does something happen? Is it like the Bloods and the Crips? Is it like is it West Side Story? What happens there? Or is it just people who like watching the roundabout? It's by races, is it?
Cars.
Ah, got you.
It's nice.
Yeah,
we should have done the gig on Sunday night. If I'd known that, we could have filled the top bit as well.
Exactly. Yeah, all the boy races.
Could have put some free pizzas up there. Could have had him here. Very quickly, I mean, we haven't talked because you're in Upstart Crow. You're the Baldrick of the 21st century.
Yeah.
You're bottom in Upstart Crow, which is incredible. What's very brief, let's try to do this, but it's, you know, you had this very early success and then you had quite a lot of TV success quite quickly.
Yeah.
So you were in the actual original Friday Night Project, was
that
called?
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So with Alan
Jimmy Carr. And Sharon Horgan.
Right, so yeah. That was the original lineup, the three of you.
Yeah.
And then Alan Carr and Justin Lee Collins took over.
Yeah.
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 So that was like proper Channel 4.
Yeah, that was
prime
was.
Time.
Yeah, it was nuts. Yeah. Yeah. It's crazy. And then it all just waved the millionaire's boat off. I forgot to get on the boat. Hey, I've got a greenhouse, so
yeah. That's a weird, you know. It is a weird thing with showbiz, isn't it? It's something that I've also experienced as well.
Yeah,
is that, you know, you work with people, and then, you know, something happens, and
absolutely,
then
yeah,
people go off in different directions. There's no real rhyme or reason to it. You were good in the show.
It was good fun. It was good fun. And it's a weird thing. I think ultimately, like, kind of, bless you. Ultimately. You can't really plan. I never went into it with a plan.
No.
And I think I did find it hard because I think I sort of thought, oh shit, something's happening here, and oh, what's kicking off, and then it sort of kind of then it changed direction,
yeah.
And it went away, and then I remember I did a series on BBC Three or what it was called Grown Ups, the first series of that, and then I didn't want to do the second series. I had just this feeling like it was like it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like I was it was right for me. Excuse me, I'm not getting emotional. I just had trapped wind. And, pardon? You wait? Oh, light it. Oh, mate. Fire eggs, pal. Fire eggs. Theatre. They'll bring the curtain down. Bring the fire curtain down. Fortunately, tonight's Royal Lustre has been cancelled.
And we're not filming it, so we don't want to waste the visuals.
Mate, I'll come and do one in London. Okay, I'll light my farts at the end.
Okay.
In fact, if you grow the Brussels sprout plant...
Yeah.
And we'll both eat them before the show, okay. And we will light farts, the seed of which was planted at the start of this show. And that means more than being a millionaire.
It does.
If you could, because it is. I think the whole thing is like, ultimately, if you're going to do something like this, you've got to be prepared to do it for free. And yeah. I think I've learned, actually, I've been doing it for 21 years now. I've never had a proper job. That. Ultimately, whatever gig you're doing, like, you have to learn that whether you're doing a gig in a back room of a pub for 12 people or you're doing a, you know, a gig like this or, you know, whatever it is, you've got to just do that, not think if I do that, it might lead to this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Otherwise, actually, you don't, you're not in the moment. And crucially, you don't enjoy the thing that you're doing. And like, this is ludicrously good fun to be able to do this. And all the travel and all the driving and all the, you know, the hard bits... you have to remember this is playtime. It's ridiculous. Like, this is, and it's really good fun, and I love it. So I kind of, and I think I've learned that through having some, you know, some things happened and then it went away. But I always had stand up. And I also had a family, and which is, I've got a life that I really enjoy, and I feel very lucky. If you'd have told me that 21 years when I started 21 years ago that I'd still be doing it, I wouldn't have. Believed you. And then something random like Upstart Crow came along and I went for the audition. I'd not had an audition for... That was it. So I said... I didn't want to do the second series of Grown Ups. So I said to my agent at the time, I'm worried that the phone will stop ringing. She said,
you know, the phone won't stop ringing. And it absolutely stopped ringing. They even took the landline away. It was ridiculous. Get broadband or anything. And then I just did gigs. And I think I became a much better stand-up.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it all happened too early. Maybe I wasn't ready. I wasn't necessarily in control of myself. I didn't know who I was. I drank too much. But, you know, just an old thing, I didn't go into it like it was a career. I went into it because I thought, I was sort of coming back to the start, like it was an escape route for me.
Yeah.
And I think if you end up doing something that you love, you do it because you can't not do it. I think that's what it comes down to. So if you do everything like you're doing it for free and it owes you nothing, then you'll always enjoy it. And then you can enjoy whatever comes along. Yeah. And I was really lucky and that audition came up. I'd not had an audition for maybe a decade. Other than adverts, which are pointless going for, and I went in, and I think, and I'd done a panel show years ago with David, and I realised as well something I'd probably never done in my career was I learnt my lines before I went in.
Right,
shock horror, that helps in audition.
I think, you know, again, that's the kind of thing I find really hard. You think, well, you know, I'll learn the lines if you give me the part, you know, but yeah. It's absolutely the truth. I can read it. But actually, if you go in and you know it,
yeah.
But you really need to know it, though. That's
the thing. Then you can play. You can play with it. And also, like, when they sent the scripts, they sent all six. They let us, you know, before an audition, you read all six of them.
Yeah.
And it literally was like, you know... So when I was a kid, growing up in a village, that you had... For me, there was Vic and Bob. There was Blackadder. There was Fry and Laurie. That felt like that kind of time. And Harry Enfield...
It's just before stuff. I was on the telly, so it's all right. This is a second.
And there was Mr. Fun.
Yeah.
But I probably wasn't alternative enough at that time in my taste to follow Fist of Fun. I didn't find it. Then I found it second time round. So I did. You were there, Richard. You were there. Yeah. But so then this thing came through, and I read it all, and what it did for me, that's what it was. I think the right things find you in the end. Because for me, I never understood Shakespeare when I was at school. I struggled and struggled and struggled with it. So I couldn't wrap my head around the language and the metaphors and all that kind of stuff. And bottom was exactly how I felt when I was having Shakespeare lessons at school.
Right.
Like kind of, it's too many bloody words. Or why are you doing that? And so it was almost like it was... I didn't have to act, crucially.
Right.
It was like he'd written stuff that I absolutely felt about Shakespeare. And I also remember that there was a nice symmetry to it. When I was doing GCSE English, it was when the fourth series of Blackadder was going out. I'd be writing my essays upstairs on First World War poetry and then run downstairs and watch Blackadder. And Blackadder helped me understand what I was trying to write about. So it was a hoot from start to finish, and I went in and David's an absolute gentleman and really amazing to work with, brilliant, and it was 3 years of absolutely nothing but fun.
That's great. Is it over?
Well, we've not heard about doing any more. Right. We've not heard about doing any more. But I think everyone would love to do them if it popped up. But who knows what could happen? But it's just to be in a room like with, you know, that lot and Harry Enfield and Ben Elton every week for, you know, however many weeks. It was amazing.
Yeah. It is great, and it's really. I think it's just so interesting. I mean, this happens a lot with show businesses. People, you know, and someone's new and they get kind of lifted up and then they get smashed down again. And it is that exactly. You know, for you to get through that with that attitude, first of all, but then to get this reward, and I'm sure many more to come after this as well, but, you know, to get this lovely thing end of that, it's terrific. But, you know, if you haven't seen Rob's stand-up, you must go and see it. It's fantastic. You have been working constantly, haven't you, on the road?
You've never stopped. This is the only way to pay the mortgage.
Yeah.
But fortunately, I really, really love doing it.
Yeah, so, but I think that's, you know, I think a lot, that also what happens a lot is new stand-ups get onto telly and then they can't do the gigs in the same way, you know, or they stop doing stand-ups and become presenters. Mm. And you're absolutely right. I think some things happen too quickly and you're not as good as you would be. You're still good, but you're not as good as you would be. And then you get another 10 years of going out on the road and then you're a really good comedian.
I think the people that, you know, that my contemporaries who got really big, like someone like Jimmy, who I started out with, Jimmy Carr, like he would, in his gigs, he would be absolutely brilliant. And then he'd go home and he'd work on it, and the next night he'd be even better. He'd be even sharper.
Yeah.
Sarah's the same, Sarah Millican. Yeah, like she so some people come through and they're almost like they've got some life behind them. Like Jimmy had worked for Shell, hadn't he?
Yeah.
Sarah had been through a divorce. She knew herself. She wasn't finding herself on stage. I think that's quite important.
Yeah.
And they were able to, all of them, develop at the pace that their careers developed at. And I don't think that happens for everyone. And you can't, you know, you can't manufacture that. You can't force it.
No.
It just happens. And there's only so many tickets to be sold, and there's only so many people who can go to gigs. And I think the people who manage to do it and sustain it, they're doing it because they're working really, really fucking hard.
Yeah.
Really hard.
Too hard, right?
Too hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, and that's another question you've got to ask yourself as well, is like kind of to sustain like a level of ambition. That's something else as well, isn't it? I was thinking about this in the bath the other day.
Just they don't have baths, those guys. They weren't, they're they too busy
time
working.
For baths. Yeah, they absolutely hum. But see, and to sustain that, that takes a kind of stamina. I don't know that I've got it. I don't know that I've got the. I really love doing it, and I find it something that I gravitate towards and love doing. But I don't know. Yeah, to sustain your stamina, your appetite for something. Because sometimes you've got to fall in and out of love with it as well. And then, and for me, I've always had to find... I think I've found more of a balance now with my life and working.
Yeah.
So that I can try and really have a good gig at home and a good gig at night. Yeah. Then that feels like that's the goal.
Yeah. It's a big concern. It's a big thing that I think you have to think about.
Mm.
And it is that. And comedy's interesting because it is a broad church and you can get people who are just naturally... very, very funny, and can just go on stage and dick around.
Yeah,
and it's still as good, you know. It's still as good as somebody who's crafted and worked really hard. And stuff.
Yeah,
so you can, you know, you can use this job as like, oh, I work 20 minutes a night and that's it, or you can use this job as I'm going to work 18 hours a day and re-listen to all my gigs.
Or you can, it can be just how you make sense of life, like whether you write or you do music or whatever our audience do here, whether they paint or make pots or they garden or they enjoy DIY, whatever it is.
Eating pizza on a wall,
watching roundabouts, whatever you want to do. It's how we all make sense of life, isn't it? It's like why we drove up, wrote on the caves, cave painting and stuff. And I think ultimately it's about, I don't know, it's just a way of making sense of everything, really.
Yeah.
But I've lost my train of thought.
It's good. We got there.
I felt like it was going to be something profound, but I've run out of words.
It almost was. If we'd worked a bit harder at this, it would be fucking
brilliant. Exactly. Yeah. If you knew what we'd planned.
It's fun to write it, but we just made it up.
Exactly.
And fuck them. Fuck the people working hard. Fuck them. Right. I think on that bombshell, we better go. Look, it's been... any strong feelings about rhubarb before we go? Because they've been waiting, going, where's the fucking rhubarb stuff coming up?
No, you're already... I've got rhubarb coming out of my arse at the moment at home. I should have brought your bag.
Yeah.
Burn it. You're not into rhubarb.
That guy's going to get burnt.
Oh, mate, do you not enjoy the sour twang of a rhubarb stick?
It was just another, like, in your farts callback if it's coming out.
Oh, that nice callback, though. What's your name, sir?
Tom,
have you ever lit a fart, Tom?
No, I'm too scared.
You're too scared? Right, Tom, light a fart. Light a fart. Tom, light a fart. Come on, everyone. Light a fart. Light a fart. Light a fart. Tom, light a fart. Get up in here, Tom.
What if...
Assume the farting position, and there is one, and light a fart, Tom.
We could all be burnt to death.
Can anyone in this room...
What a great end to the festival.
Can anyone in this room fart at will? That's a question.
In my
dreams. In your dreams. What a dream to have, love. She's a lady. Whoa, 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 she's a lady. Talking about the pretty lady. I'd love to be in those dreams. What a dream to have. That is a dream. That's a life goal. That's a lady. That's how she makes sense of life. A dream I could fart at will. Because if you could fart at will... Sorry, I don't even have your name. What's your name? Jane, lovely to meet you, Jane. Jane, you're a princess. Jane, if you could fart at will, what would you do with that power, Jane? What would be the plan?
Like...
Yeah.
Make people feel really uncomfortable.
Beautiful.
She can do silent one in lifts so she can make people feel uncomfortable. Like, you know, yeah. I can do that pretty much any time. It's not...
I wish I could fart at will.
Can fart at will.
Can you?
Well, I've always got something up there. I've always got something in the chamber.
Has anyone got a lighter on him? Come on, let's do this. So I need from you, Rich, is what you to lie on your back. And when you put your legs in the air, and we can edit it down.
I've got my nice suit on. I'm not.
Yeah, but come
I'm
on,
not
mate.
Getting fire near it.
Come on, mate. It's about the fucking laugh. Come on, poo. We've got water. We'll put you out if it goes wrong. Has anyone got a lighter? Come on. And I know this one's not being filmed, gutted, but yeah. We could film it. We could pop it online as an extra special bit behind us. There we go. Right, Rich.
I'm worried. I'm worried it might...
On your back. Don't worry, Rich. You're in safe hands, Rich. I've done this before.
I'm worried I might just follow through. That's my main worry.
You follow through. There is no shame in that. We've all done that.
I don't think I can do it.
Trying to impress the ladies. Now.
No, it's not. There's nothing in there.
Come on, Rich.
There's nothing in the chamber.
No, I can work them out of you. Seriously. Take your jacket off if you're worried about damaging the jacket. No, don't worry about your trousers. They'll be fine. What are they made of? Your trousers? Take your tie off because that looks flammable. I'm not asking you to wee next to me, Rich. I'm asking you to fart. And I'm going to set fire to it. This gentleman's filming it. Thank you. Excellent. Great. Can we get to... Great. Mate, go landscape, for Christ's sake. Pop it off, start again, otherwise you'll end up flipping it. It'll end up being a thin strip in the middle of a landscape. Do it landscape, then we've got two angles on it. Can we set someone on this side? Someone on this side. Can we get an overhead, high up one, just in case? I mean, if she blows, this is going to be fantastic.
I don't think it's going to come.
I think you're going to have to face the audience. That's it. Yeah. No. This. So, through 90 degrees. That's it. That's what we need. Now, I'll just move your occasional table back a bit because I don't want to damage that.
Is this real?
Yes, yeah, it. Now, first of all, on a scale of 1 to 10, yeah. Rich, how close are you to farting?
Really, nowhere near.
Okay,
it's everything's just really restricted.
For the record, for the purpose of the podcast, I'm now moving Rich's legs up and down, like in a cycling motion. Just try to work. As I've raised two babies as well, so now to work wind up. We're doing circles now, Rich. Are you getting closer?
No, it's getting closer. It's further away. It's going
getting
back
closer.
Up.
Is it going back up?
Yeah.
How about if you really try and push? We can wait, can't we, ladies and gentlemen? It's good. I know it's going to be worth it, Rich. Come on, mate. Come on, Rich. You can do it.
I've been farting all day.
You've been farting all day?
All day long.
Are you close?
Hold on. There might be something.
Are you near? Right, pull your legs right back. Tell me when you go, and I'm going to put the lights on. Are you ready? Yeah. Hang on. Stay calm. Stay calm. Right, you tell me when you're going to go.
No.
You can't pull out of it.
No.
Come on, let's do it. Rich, mate, this will go viral. This will go so viral. Look how many cameras are on.
I know.
Look
at this.
Do you have any power, Richard?
You're filming me back there.
Get on the... Come on.
I can't do it.
Yeah, come on, do it.
You do it.
No, I can't. I haven't got any gas in me, but you're the host. This is what it needs. Mate, this will put you on the telly again. Look at you. Look at him. He's ready for TV. He's slimline. He's looking great. Are you wearing makeup? You look like you got makeup on in
it's
a good way.
Natural.
Your hair looks great. You've got a great suit on. Come on, mate. This will put you back on the box. Come on. On your back. Let's do this.
Can't do it. I've got nothing in there.
No, you have.
I have.
Jump up and down a bit. If you. When did you have the lentils?
Time.
Doesn't matter about the lunchtime. Time. Fuck it. This is theatre. So I brought... It's a minor coming the wrong way.
Yeah.
Just jump up and down. Jump up and down. So come on.
I need a wee now, though.
That's fine.
I need a bit. That's gonna.
That's fine. Right, back on your back. Chin in position. Let's do it. Come on.
You'll thank me for this. It's going to be immense. Put your legs right up. Tuck them up. Are you getting anything?
No.
Come on. Try jiggling your stomach like that. Right, just doing like, you know, tummy rolls.
It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen.
Come on, Reggie. It's coming. It's going to be... Come on, don't bail on it. Come on, just see it through. Is anyone in a rush? No, there's your answer. Come on, okay. We're going to do this.
It could be a couple of hours.
Get the trousers tight round your anus. Tell me when you need it. Just because I don't want to check, can you put your finger where your anus is? That's the spot. X marks the spot. Has anyone got a piece of chalk? I don't want to get it in the wrong place when you dispense. Come on, Rich, you can do it. You can do it.
Really,
do you want me to massage your tummy? I'll massage your tummy. Relax. You're so tense. Relax. Gotta relax. Come on, you're a semi-professional snooker player. Come on.
This is the could be back in the Transgressive Art Festival with this.
It's lovely. Everything comes round in the end. It's all full circle. Come on, Rich. You're close. Come on. Please be close. Come on. Come on, Rich. You can do it.
I've got bum shyness.
The one time you get shy. All the things you've said on the stage, Rich, and on this podcast, and now you're getting shy. Come on. Come on. You can do it. Come on. Come on.
Oh, if the people listening at home to this, I'm so glad it's... Just like people
Rich, you paint a picture with words. Richard's lying on his back in front of 400 people in Wakefield, and I'm massaging his stomach in a circular motion. Enjoy your journey wherever you're travelling to, whether you're listening to this at work.
I can't fart at will. I admit feel free. It now. I can't.
Feel free to fart along at home as well. Remembering to stay away from any net curtains. Right, Rich.
Not going to
happen. Now pull your legs up.
But if one try.
Come on, really push. That's the spot, is it there?
Yeah.
Tell me when to go, and I'm going to put the light back. Come on, even if we get a little one, it'd be absolutely amazing. Just even if it's like the smallest little. Don't you dare roll onto your front!
I'm not doing it.
Has anyone else got one brewing? Come on, get up here. I'll light anyone's farts tonight. Come on. Jane, are you wearing jeans? Come on, Janie. Come on, Rich, if someone does one, you'll want to do it. I'm not going to let this go. Come on. Come on, who's anyone got one brewing? Anyone feeling a bit gassy today? Just put your hand up.
Bring Ricky Wilson back.
Come on, Rich.
We can't. I'm taking back control.
Take the bloody roof off.
I'm taking back control. We're Brexiting this. It's on, what Rich. The people here want, and this is what they're going to get.
Come on.
No, we're going.
Come on, mate.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Come on. Come on. Come on, Rich. Come on.
I really, once I stood up, I nearly had one, but honestly.
Come on. Go. You nearly had one. Come on, do it. Come on. Don't put the jacket on, it'll get burnt.
It's going back.
Come on.
It's going back.
No. Come on. Please. Rich.
I'm a 52-year-old man, nearly.
Rich.
I'm dressed up in a suit.
Rich.
I thought, this is it. I'm meeting Kay Mellors, turning around, I'm going to play a pimp.
Seriously.
Then this has ruined it.
All the sadness.
She's never going to give me a job now. You're right.
Come on.
Not happening. Ladies and gentlemen.
You've got too emotional. Come on. Come on, Rich. Come on.
I'm not doing it.
It's not over.
It's not over. I'm going to the foyer.
I'm going to fling around with the lights. Come on. Come on, I brought you... Oh, eat some sprout! The plant will survive if you eat that sprout leaf. They're really sweet. Eat that. The magic sprout. The power of the sprout, Rich. Come on.
It's nice, though.
It's sweet, isn't it? No. Yeah, it's fresh, yeah. Mm. Here we go. Just need to put some fuel in the fire. You know what I mean? Fuel the engine. Go on, Rich. Don't stop looking at your watch.
I was trying to wrap up 25 minutes ago.
On your watch, it says fart o'clock. Come on. Come on.
I'm not doing it.
Come on, do it.
It's not going to happen.
Come on, Rich. Just one more time. One more time. Now you've had the leaf. Come on. Just one more time. I'm not going to let this go. You need to understand that about. You can ring Ian. He'll tell you that won't stop. Come on. I'm going to put your arms up in the air.
It's not
going
to happen. I need a wee too much to do a fart.
Go and have a wee. We'll just wait. Go and have a wee.
If I go and have a wee, you won't see me again.
You'll wait, won't you? Yeah, exactly, they're fine.
I'll go and have a wee and back at the hotel.
I've got a biscuit on the floor. In my back pocket. Do you want that? Would that help?
Fine.
Come on, come on, Mitch. Come on.
Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a loud big round of applause to Rob Rouse? You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Terring, and my guest, Rob Rouse. Thank you to Pest for providing the music. Thank you for the Long Division Festival in Wakefield and the Wakefield Theatre Royal for providing a space to do this wonderful recording. Thank you to everyone at GoFasterStripe.com. Thank you to everyone at Acast, everyone at the British Comedy Guide. Thanks to my mum and dad for having me. That was very nice of you. Oh, just imagine you having sex. That's ruined everything. Thank you to my producers, who I'm indebted to, James Hingley and Ben Walker. And this is a Sky Potato Fuzz of GoFasterStripe.com production. Go to GoFasterStripe.com. You can buy lots of cool DVDs and downloads and books from me and lots of other people. Go to Rahalastapa.co.uk and you can be a member if you like and get loads of bonus extras, including stand-up shows, the backstage interviews we do, entry into a prize draw. Loads of stuff. It's brilliant. See you later.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks for listening. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for all your Rich Terring download and book needs. Go to RichTerring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.